America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like, whatever, dude.
Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Before, if you're disabled on Medicaid right now, you've been crowded out of those programs by people turning down work. Able-bodied people, 35-year-olds sitting at home playing video games. They're going to now have to go get a job. That's right. And by the way, that's a good thing for them. Their mom doesn't want them sitting in the basement playing video games anyway. But now it no longer will be crowding out Medicaid for the truly needy people who deserve it.
All right, good weekend to you. This is Wiggins America. Hope you're having a great holiday weekend thus far, with a little bit left. I opened with that clip from Steve Scalise because I have been very, very critical of the Big Beautiful Bill. I like a lot of what's in it. I keep saying that. But it got worse in the Senate, and now it went back to the House, and they were able to shave some things off of it and make it a little bit better again. But it's like the original House version was decent, but still spent $500 billion more per year than it took in. So it was still adding to the deficit, and that's the problem. Then they sent it to the Senate, and the Senate moved that to about $1.2, $1.3 trillion extra that it adds to the deficit every year. They spent more, and they shaved away some of the good stuff in it. Part of that is because the Senate parliamentarian got involved and all that stuff, but I won't get into that now. Then they sent it back to the House, and the House looks like on Thursday night, Friday morning, they were able to, without really changing the bill, they were able to like tweak some things and get some assurances from Trump that he would do some things that were going to save a little bit more money and remove some more of the Green New Deal stuff that the Senate put back in. So ultimately, it's probably down to about adding another trillion to the deficit per year. That's not good. It's really bad. And in fact, that is the main reason why it sucks. I have said this over and over and over. I do not support that bill for that reason. But the bill is passed now, and so I'm going to get over it. And one of the things I asked Mike Boss on Friday on the Annie Fry Show, I'm sorry, on Thursday. I actually got my days mixed up because of yesterday or Friday being the 4th. When was it? Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Anyway, you know what's going on. So I asked Mike Boss on Thursday when he was on the House floor, we were talking to him, will you pass this, be able to do anything to further get closer to or balance the budget? And his answer was that they were going to continue to try, but that's always the answer. And I don't fault him. I mean, he was just being honest. He wasn't saying like, he wasn't trying to politic me. He was just saying, look, we'll try. But he also was very, very honest. It's one of the reasons I like Mike Boss, is that he said a lot of what we have to do now would require 60 votes, which is why they were trying to do so much in this one thing, because it's a procedure that only requires a simple majority, and they were able to do a lot more with that. So it didn't sound that optimistic, honestly, and that's the problem with it. However, I go back again. I opened with the cut from Steve Scalise talking about Medicaid cuts because I'm trying to focus on the positives here, and there are a lot of them. I pulled up a tweet from Chip Roy. He's one of my favorite voices on this because there's so many details and they change so much. But the House conservatives, the House Conservative Caucus, was able to get quite a bit of stuff into this that otherwise wouldn't have been. And I really don't understand. I really don't. Why, if you're in the House and you're a Republican, why wouldn't you be in the House Conservative Caucus? It's like 80 people out of 215 or whatever it is. And it's like, why, if you're a Republican, why are you not in the conservative caucus? I don't understand, unless there's something more like boys club about it that I don't know about. But at least in theory, you should be as conservative as you possibly can be if you're a Republican, unless you're maybe from a very swingy district or something. But here's Rep. Roy's statement on the passage of the One Beautiful Bill Act. He says that the House Freedom Caucus worked with the president from Congress to force Congress to deliver substantial victories. And that is true. When they started this process, they were told that you can only save maybe $300 billion. House conservatives secured $1.6 trillion legitimate savings. And I should point out that the version that we were under up until that now, this weekend, it was spending $2 trillion more per year than we were bringing in. They cut that in half, essentially. And so that's a, it's a win, but it's like, that's okay, good enough. Is that the best you can do? Trip Roy says, we were told we cannot touch Medicaid. House conservatives touched, secured over $1 trillion in Medicaid and Obamacare reforms, established work requirements, get people off their butts who don't need to be on it, and nearly returned Medicaid to pre-Biden spending levels. You couldn't even return it to 2019. It's so sad. I guess inflation does matter. We were told we cannot touch SNAP/food benefits, food stamps. House conservatives secured over $100 billion in savings, ensuring it goes to citizens over illegal aliens. We were told we should temper House our expectations on repealing the Green New Scam. House conservatives secured the termination of 90% of the future Green New Scam projects. He says future there, specifically because they weren't able to get rid of the ones ongoing, and that was kind of the goal. So call that a win if you want to. Saving $500 billion, so there's a lot of the savings that they did. We were told we cannot do anything for health savings accounts. House conservatives secured their use for direct primary care, making them much more effective for hardworking Americans seeking choice. The swamp in Congress and on K Street tried to stop the president and those of us fighting to deliver substantial spending reductions and reforms at each step of the way, but we won fights that they said we could not win. I do appreciate that approach. It is a negotiation. I don't want to just grandstand. I like people who grandstand hard the whole time and don't give up on their principles. But at some point, you got to take as many wins as you can get. If you're not even a part of the process, you don't get any wins. So there's a very delicate balance there. I'm trying to focus on the wins. This really will help the business community. I mean, this has some tremendous incentives to move companies and factories here and build things here and write off, you know, hard expenses for businesses in a much bigger way than it ever was before. So a lot of that are big wins, and we really will see the economy improve because of this thing. And we should focus on that. I'm preaching to myself here. I should focus on that more, because all I've done is dog on it when it really did secure a lot of things. And one of those things is making sure that illegal immigration goes down, 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 down. They've already done a great job of stopping it from coming in, but they need a lot more resources to continue deportations. Otherwise, it's going to kind of slow down. This, they say, secures 1 million deportations a year, which still won't even get rid of all the illegals that came over during Biden, amazingly. But it's a step in the right direction. I guess that's the thesis, isn't it? It's a step in the right direction.
Wiggins America.
You know, very quickly issued nationwide injunctions to stop a policy in its tracks, that, you know, something the president and or Congress has determined to be the national policy, and it just one district court stops it. And then you combine that with the ability of people to forum shop, to go to a particular district court where they think that that will be the result. And you look at something like that and you think, that can't be right, that one district court, whether it's in, you know, in the Trump years, people used to go to the Northern District of California. And in the Biden years, they go to Texas. And it just can't be right that one district judge can stop a nationwide policy in its tracks and leave it stopped for the years that it takes to go through normal process.
Wiggins! Oh! Wiggins!
Right.
Brian Wiggins here in studio with us now, and that was Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan, of course, 3 years ago.
Oh, that wasn't recent.
Oh, no, and it's shocking, I know, that she seems to have changed her mind, because clearly, as you just heard in that soundbite, she did not think that these district judges should be able to issue these nationwide injunctions, and then, oh, what do you know, last week when she voted otherwise.
She was not mincing words either. It wasn't like she was saying, well, there's two sides of this. She was saying, it is a bad idea to have district courts able to issue nationwide injunctions, mm-hmm. and then went, eh.
I don't know.
Let's allow district courts to issue nationwide injunctions instead of what I said previously.
Now that Trump's in office, I've changed my mind a little bit.
Yeah, so I brought for you a list of policies. Now, we've been focusing on the Big Beautiful Bill, but there are a bunch of policies that could go into effect solely by Trump's executive order. Now, we could debate separately whether that's a good way of governing or not, but that's the world we live in right now. But he has a bunch of policies that we've probably tread over the last, you know, several months, but reminding you what can now go into effect. Because I don't think we've really talked about that a whole lot. Mm-mm. The Supreme Court ruling was huge.
Right.
But then all of the different things that Trump can now enact that have been blocked by judges. And by the way, before we get into these, you know, it's not as if district court judges can't rule on these things anymore. They just can't issue nationwide stoppages.
Right. It would have a local impact.
It would have a local impact. And then there's still, you know, the circuit courts, they could stop things in their districts, which is multiple states. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if there's no check and balance here. The check and balance is actually going back to the elected representatives instead of the unelected ones.
Like the birthright citizenship thing, because the Supreme Court decided not to make a ruling on that. I'm assuming that'll be one of the first things they take up when they're back in session in October.
Yeah.
So they still could. They still could try to stop that on the local level, but like you said, it's not going to have a nationwide impact.
Right, right. Yeah. And they still will. That still will happen. It's just it'll affect that district or that area if it's a circuit court. So the first one, though, that will be affected by these rulings that Trump can now enact would be funding for sanctuary cities. So a federal judge in San Francisco blocked implementation of that a while back. Well, that's going to go away pretty quickly here, and Attorney General Pam Bondi said, yeah, we're working on that really as we speak.
Which, by the way, is timely because, you know, he just filed a lawsuit against the L.A. Mayor, Karen Bass, and the city council for their sanctuary city policies.
Yes. So there's going to be a lot of funding wars. He's already fired a warning shot at Mamdani if he yeah. wins in New York.
Great guy. Real. I love all his policies. Stand behind him.
That guy's finding out now on a national stage what it means to run for office. Because mm-hmm. a lot of his past stuff is like, whoa, buddy.
Was it the music video? Was in or
oh, I didn't even
movie?
See that.
Oh, you gotta Google this.
Just some of the things he said, like defund the police, and he's like, well, we shouldn't defund the police, like Kagan, like back and forth.
Oh, I changed my mind.
Yeah, now that I'm running for a more prominent place. Voter ID. This is one that's very much in the Big Beautiful Bill right now, or at least there are aspects in the Big Beautiful Bill in the House version that don't look to have made it in the Senate version. But President Trump has issued an executive order stating that they would require voter ID and proof of citizenship to vote. Well, that was stalled, but now you don't really know where it is because it'll be, like we said before, districts may block it, but nationwide you can't just issue a blanket statement saying nobody can do it. So that one's going to be really tricky because you're still talking about just federal elections too, so it's not all local elections. So that one's going to be very, very interesting, and you'll probably, unfortunately, see that it'll be more red-leaning states that won't address it,
sure.
and therefore it'll be, which it already kind of mm-hmm. is, and then the bluer areas will have district courts that'll say, no, you can't do that here,
right.
like individually. But it remains to be seen. So that'll still be moving forward. $3 trillion in funding freezes for funding and grants to states while they were reviewed for alignment with the administration's goals and policies. Basically, you're doing things we don't like. I'm above you. I control the money. I'm going to freeze your funds. I don't really understand why a district court was able to stop that. I mean, that's the hierarchy, mm-hmm. like it or not, because Biden did the same thing.
Right.
And you'd be like, well, how could you do? Well, he's elected the president. That's what the president does. He's able to control some of these things. So he's able to start really wielding the power of the purse as the president. 23 states sued to block him from being able to do that. Well, those will have to go through now different courts because the district court national injunction won't matter anymore. So I'll say this. Liberals and leftists and Democrats, not all the same people, are right to have been very concerned about that national injunction order from the Supreme Court.
Because of the implications
the
it
implications,
now has.
Yep. And that's just the first three. There's a couple more here I want to get to before we run out of time. Public school DEI programs. You know, there was a lot of hand-wringing that Trump was stopping these things, and so they'd just go to a court and they'd say, issue a ruling, and they would, and they'd stop it. Well, that's going to be tough to stop now because these are individual schools. So it's not like they can just go to an appeals court. It's harder to do. Mm-hmm. Like the voter ID thing, that's going to be tough and patchy. But public school DEI programs, I mean, if you're getting federal funding.
I was going to say, yeah, we're publicly funding these schools that are indoctrinating our kids like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's not just, you know, grade school, high schools. This is colleges, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just saw recently the University of Virginia president just resigned because she would not get along with Trump. And Trump is winning these battles. Taxpayer transgender funding. So not that you can't do it. You just can't require taxpayers to fund it. That's kind of the point here. And the last one, Kim, is a big one. USAID funding.
Ah.
Finally, the Supreme Court decision could permit Trump to move ahead with administration's efforts to effectively end the U.S. Agency for International Development. End the agency.
Which will anger so many people because that has been so controversial.
Well, the problem is they would do they're smart. They would do just enough goodwill, you know, like feeding people in third world nations and doing things. They actually did some of that. It's just that J.D. Vance said recently, it's probably about 80 to 90% of the money that those organizations got went to themselves or to political donations and things. About 10% to 15% went to the actual goal of it. And so they would do that basically to run cover. The obvious point of the organization was not to feed hungry children, but they knew that if you pulled their funding, they could scream, you're stopping feeding hungry children.
Yeah,
so it's not as if, like, the merits of doing those things are almost a different debate. The way that it was being done needs to be completely scrapped.
Yeah.
And now it looks like Trump's going to be able to do all that. So this is all, if you're on board with the Trump agenda, man, it's going to be high flying.
Like to do, bring you some movie suggestions. And of course, we're going to bring you free movie suggestions with our streaming correspondent, Chris Woolsey. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you doing, Ryan? Thanks so much for having me back.
Yeah, I love when you come on about once a month and just give us some, setting up July is what we're doing here. You don't have to watch everything this weekend, but some great titles that you guys have. Well, before we jump into the titles, actually, explain Watch Free Plus, because that's where a lot of these are.
Yes, absolutely. So Watch Free Plus is Vizio Television's free entertainment streaming service. So if you have a Vizio TV, you just turn it on, click on the homepage on the Watch Free Plus icon, and it takes you to an area that has tens of thousands of free movies and TV shows. If you don't own a Vizio TV, not a problem. All you do is go to your favorite mobile app store, download the free Vizio mobile app to your favorite mobile device, tablet, or phone, and create a free Vizio account, and you are off to the races with over 300 free streaming channels to watch.
Fantastic. So easy to do. And then you can watch these titles. I pulled up a couple here just because these are movies I've seen. There's a few on here that I haven't seen that I'll have to have you explain. But The Game is one with Michael Douglas.
Oh my gosh, I love this film. So this is actually one of David Fincher's first films. This is from 97. Such a great film. Michael Douglas, Sean Penn, a wealthy industrialist who's bored with his life, signs up to play this game that he thinks is going to be super fun, ends up the people running the game, not so much fun. It's terrifying. If you love thrillers, this is a forgotten gem, and in my opinion, it's one of Fincher's greatest movies.
So I remember first watching this movie when it came out, and it just completely blowing my mind with the, like, oh my gosh, ending. But I wondered, you know, if you've seen it recently, because I haven't really seen it since then, if it holds up, because I remember the ending, so I'm like, ooh, if I watch it again, will it be a different experience, you know?
Yeah, so I watched it recently with my son, who is a film snob, getting ready to go to film school, and he was like, "You're right, Dad. This actually lived up to the hype. I now see why people were like so excited about Fincher when he first came out of the gates with this." And I think it holds up really well. And I mean, part of it is the performances of Sean Penn and Michael Douglas are like through the roof. They're just so good in this.
Remind me, so another one that I've seen a long time ago, but it's been a while, that I remember loving, but I don't remember why, because I remember the game. But Pi is one that I remember watching and thinking, oh, that was a really cool movie, but I don't remember anything about it now.
Sure. So this is, again, a director who has become huge, Darren Aronofsky. This was actually his first feature film out of film school. Pi, low budget, black and white. And I liked it because not only is the script really well written, it's one of those concept movies where you're like, okay, this is a really interesting question. So the main character is this mathematician who's trying to understand what pi is, why it exists, the mathematical concept of pi. So he wants to know, like, why does it exist? What does it do? What's its purpose? And as he's trying to unravel this sort of mathematical mystery, these people come at him from the finance district, but also this religious cult who want to know what pi is, because one of them believes they can use it to predict the stock market, and another believes that it's a sort of a portal to God. And it's really interesting. It's very taut, and you see a lot of the reasons why Aronofsky is a great director in this very early example of his work.
Yeah, now that you say that, I remember it better. And I remember watching it and thinking, because it's all in black and white, and it feels very like art film. And and I remember watching it going, I think I'm experiencing something different here. But it wasn't like other art films in that you kind of labor to get through it. It was like, this is like really engaging.
Yep. That's my problem with a lot of art films. I'm like, all right, let's wrap this up. I understand what you're doing here, but this is not that exciting. But this one is like a taut thriller as an art house film. Yeah, I love it.
So since it's 4th of July weekend, let's talk about some goofy stuff, too. How about Sharknado? I've still never seen it.
Oh, my gosh. So it is made. I didn't realize this. I thought, you know, it's a cult classic. People talk, they laugh about it. It's actually made billions of dollars. Like, it has been played so many times that they have literally made a fortune off what I think was like less than $1 million budget. It's a little ridiculous. 2013, Ian Ziering, Tara Reid, John Hurd is in this. It's a hurricane hits Santa Monica, California, and launches hundreds of sharks into the Santa Monica region. It's ridiculous. It's idiotically over the top. But, you know, a lot of people are going to be going into the water with it being summer now. And we just, you know, we wanted to lump together a bunch of these cautionary tales. So we have the Shark Attack channel on Watch 3 Plus this month that launches on Thursday. And there are dozens and dozens of your favorite cheesy shark classic, the Bull Shark franchise, the Sharknado franchise, Open Water, which is actually based on a true story and is terrifying, tons and tons, you know, but we want to keep it grounded and real. So we do have Five-Headed Shark Attack in there as well.
I was going to say, Five-Headed Shark Attack is on the list. I've never even heard of that one, but that sounds like it was probably a documentary, right?
Absolutely. You know what's hilarious about it? So it started with Two-Headed Shark Attack, three, then it jumped to five. There's no four-headed shark attack, and we can't figure out why. I've been searching all week. It's like they were like, no, that's ridiculous. Nobody could possibly believe a four-headed shark attack. But five, let's do five.
Or maybe four-headed shark was too real. You know, two and three, they're like, oh, that's ridiculous. But there was an actual four-headed shark back in the 70s, so we're going to skip that one.
There you go.
Anything else to highlight, Chris, before we run?
I mean, tons of great. We have Bram Stoker's Dracula, the Francis Ford Coppola 1992 classic. That is amazing. Highly recommended. Tons of action films. We've got Crank with Jason Statham, Snitch with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. We've just got so much stuff there. I mean, whatever you're looking for, in terms of free entertainment, Vizio Watch Free Plus has got something for you.
All right, Watch Free Plus if you have a Vizio TV. If not, you just download the Vizio app like I have, and you get all this stuff for free, plus lots and lots more. Chris, thanks so much for being our streaming correspondent, and I hope you have a great holiday weekend.
Hey, thanks much. You too. Have a great 4th, and we will talk very soon.
All right. We will be right back with more Wiggins America. Looking at the news this weekend, it's a little bit lighter, so that's good, but we're going to dive back in, so stick around.
Before we go, a quick thank you to everybody who tuned in to the Music for Fireworks on Friday night. That is one of my, it's really the main special I do in the year. Although, I guess when there's really any holiday and we're doing special programming, I'm a part of that. I'm just not hosting it. So I will help, you know, put things together behind the scenes, but I'm not the host of the show. It's not like my baby, but Music for Fireworks is my thing. That was a 5th annual on Friday night, and I love doing the show, and I always try to add new elements. Obviously, a lot of it's the same. Like, you know, you're going to hear America the Beautiful, and you're going to hear Ray Charles, and you know, some of the Lee Greenwoods, you know you're going to hear that every year. But I try to add new elements. I think one of the biggest ones I got this year was the flag, the Robin Williams talking about the flag. In fact, you know what I should do? I'm just going to play that right here because it's the main, I led with it. You know, the big new element that I added among many other things. You know, I kind of shuffle the songs around but add new things. And this is Robin Williams doing a, it's actually a pretty long comedic bit where he is the American flag. And I did kind of an abridged version because his is 7 minutes long. I tried to narrow it down to about a minute and a half. Here you go.
I'm the one that they're singing about. Yeah, I'm the Stars and Stripes Forever. Star Spangled Banner. You can call me Old Glory, but let's just keep it simple. Just call me Flag. I like the outdoors, and I'm the life of any party, whether it be Republican, Democrat, Independent, Socialist, anything libertarian, I'll be there. You know, I'm 204 years old. People say, Flag, how do you stay so young? Is it jogging? No. Is it tennis? No. It's waving. You know what I'm talking about? You know, we're talking about billowing, furling, and unfurling. Sometimes it's been tough. There have been some people try and spit on me, trample me, burn me. Foreigners and occasionally some Americans too, but I don't let it get me down because I'm not a stay-at-home kind of flag. You know, I've been to Europe. I've been to both North and South Pole. I was at Iwo Jima. Recently, I've even been to the moon. When I'm like this, that means everything is okay. When I'm upside down, well, put on your Mae West and hit the deck. But when I'm like this, well, that's not my favorite position because, well, that's half-mast. I don't mean to bum you out. I didn't come here to depress you. But I got to tell you something honestly. I haven't been getting out much lately. I guess it's not very chic to put up the flag anymore, you know? Muffin and I have a flag, but we haven't found it for very long. Hey, but look at it this way. Don't look at it as saluting me. Look at it as saluting yourselves. You know, hey, I'm just a flag, a symbol. You're the people. If I may say so from here, long may you wave.
So, unfortunately, if you missed Music for Fireworks and all those things included, you know, you got Gettysburg Address and just stuff that kind of fills out the night, you have to wait another 365 days to hear it again. But I do love doing it. Hopefully you enjoy it or made it part of your evening in some way. Here's some news to end the show today, Wiggins America. Following a years-long surge in illegal immigration, the Trump administration is addressing... Well, let me just veer from the article here from Real Clear Investigations right away. The Democrats' point in bringing in all of these illegal immigrants was twofold. One was to make them slowly over time voters that would benefit them, of course. It's odd because the legal immigrant vote has shifted like 45 points to the right to Trump. but the illegal immigrant vote they were banking would be heavily Democrat. That was one angle, and they were already doing it. You're like, oh, you know, that's conspiracy. No, no, no. They were doing this in individual cities already. New York was doing it. San Francisco is doing it. Parts of California entirely were doing it. But they were running into their own state constitutions, Santa, and they weren't able to quite get it across the line. But that was the playbook. They were trying. And so they were like, oh, well, they can't vote in state elections, but they can vote in city elections because our city, we can amend that constitution or the bylaws or whatever. So they were doing that actively already. And if Kamala had won, they would be trying to enact these things nationwide and say, well, why are you better than any other individual? They need to vote too. They're here. So that was a big import program for voters. But it was also to impact the census, which impacts the allocation of congressional seats and electoral votes. And that, gosh, there's so many different directions to go here. Okay, that was already done. I don't want to get too far into this, but the Biden administration that was in charge of the census after COVID, so it was supposed to be a Trump thing, but COVID delayed it, and then Biden took office, and they took it over, and it was like a Democrat Biden slash deep state op that apportioned the census incorrectly on purpose. And you're like, well, Ryan, how do you know that it was on purpose? Well, because they netted 5 seats gained to Democrats across the country by deliberately misapportioning the numbers. Now, this is separate from illegal immigration, but they did this. And they threw in like, oh, Utah also, we messed up Utah also, so they got an extra seat that they shouldn't have had. But ultimately, it was like 7 seats or 8 seats that went to Democrat states and accidentally 2 or 1 that went to Republican for a net gain of 5 for Democrats. And they clearly did this on purpose. And then they didn't even try to rectify it. That's the thing. It's like, well, you did it. And then you just said, oh, shoot, all done. They didn't try to fix it. They acknowledged that they had done it, though. That's what's amazing. But anyway, back to this original issue. So Democrats were trying to import people illegally to pad votes for blue states. So, back to the article. Following a years-long surge in illegal immigration, the Trump administration is poised to challenge a long-standing but legally fraught practice counting illegal aliens in the U.S. Census. President Trump tried to end the practice during his first term and successfully would have, but President Biden overturned his predecessor's policy before it was implemented. Now buoyed by red state attorneys general and Republican legislatures, the second Trump administration is determined to clean up the census and make sure that illegal aliens are not counted, White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy Stephen Miller said last month. What Miller didn't mention is that the political implications of the administration's move, it could have significant political implications because of the census count used to apportion House seats. I have seen some interesting data from all over the board as to what it would do to not count illegal immigrants in your census, which is the argument for it is so stupid. And this article goes way into the arguments for and against it. It's Real Clear Investigation, so it's pretty fair. And so I like reading both sides, but the arguments against it are so stupid. They are basically, well, they're here, so you know, you got to count them. Well, sorry, they're not citizens. So all of the things that come from the census, which includes congressional seats and electoral college seats and apportionment of money for programs, those things are things that are for citizens of the country, not for non-citizens. Why would you count non-citizens in that? Well, because, Ryan, we're using a lot of that tax money to prop up non-citizens. Yeah, that's kind of my point. Like, duh. But anyway, Trump is going after these things. This is going to be tough. This is going to be tough to do because you can't just pass, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene's going to try to pass a bill in the House and then it'll just get stalled in the Senate. It won't go anywhere. So you can't really do it through Congress because Democrats will block it at every turn. They want to count illegal immigrants in the census. So how do you do it? Well, the article goes into a lot about how you would do it through courts and attorneys general, like you said, but it's going to be tough. The legal argument for not counting illegal immigrants. So it's never actually been addressed, especially at the Supreme Court. They actually punted on the issue before. So it's never really been decided fully. And the legal arguments for it, for not counting them, are numerous. There is a lot of precedent for it. And a lot of it comes from this, I can't remember the name of it, but it's an act from 1924 that did not count Indians who did not want to be an official part of the United States in the census. So that's a big part of it. There's other things too. But the reason I'm even bringing this up is just to end the show with these numbers. Real Clear Investigations says that we're not really sure what it'll end up being if they are able to not count illegal immigrants. In the past, it probably was a wash. Although they go back to 2010 and say, actually, in that election, it probably would have benefited Republicans to not count illegal immigrants in that one. But 2020, they say they weren't really sure. It's probably a wash. And that's maybe because illegal immigrants had not come into the country quite as much as they had now. But now, estimates that I've seen suggest that if you don't count illegal immigrants in the census, that Republican states would gain anywhere from 20 to 28 seats in the House of Representatives. And when you redo the census in 2030, Trump's trying to do that early too. So that's kind of a different take on this thing. But that would also mean that if that's true, that's about 20 seats that would flip toward Republicans in the Electoral College as well. I mean, that is massive. That's like adding the state of Pennsylvania for Republicans, you know, bar none. So this is a huge, huge issue, and it's going to be fought and fought and fought over the next 4 years. He's trying to change it before the midterms. Trump is, and he's actually talking about redoing the census because of the first fraud I mentioned in 2020 that Biden they openly acknowledged. And or Biden didn't, but his people did. Biden wouldn't know. And then also because of the illegal immigrant issue. So will that happen quickly? I don't know. I think that they're gung-ho about it, but they're gung-ho about everything, right? That's the Trump administration. They move fast. All right. Thanks for tuning in this weekend. Appreciate your time. And, of course, hope you enjoyed Music for Fireworks Friday night. We will see you next weekend.